Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Pretty guilty Aaron O'Brien for throwing shade at Ash Tyler.
You feel guilty?
Yeah.
Why would you feel guilty for throwing shade at Ash Tyler?
Man, after this episode, I'm feeling a little like an asshole.
I don't.
You're a cold, cold customer. I don't know. We'll get into it, but without getting into spoilers yet. But yeah, hey, welcome back. We are here talking about the mid-season finale of Star Trek Discovery, Into the Forest I Go. So, exciting episode.
Make sure to bring your breadcrumbs. Don't want to get lost in them there woods. I hear there's a witch in the cabin out there.
Now, wait for a second. You sound like Michael Caine. I think you need to work on your Michael Caine.
Michael Caine?
Yeah, with your witch, not witches, but the breadcrumbs.
Into the forest I go with the breadcrumbs.
And do some men just want to see the world burn?
Some men just want to see the world burn.
You need to work on it, but you're close.
I need to work on it. Some men just want to see the world burn.
Well, anyways, Michael Caine, nice to have you on the episode.
To be here, Aaron. Where'd David go?
I don't know. It's so confusing. Mirror universe.
I think that's what Stamets might have done.
Yeah. Well, Michael Caine, you do know all about the Hollywood debacles that we're getting about all these sexual allegations. We did get a sexual allegation.
Indeed, I do.
Talking about shade thrown somebody's way, George Takei, he got a little shade thrown his way about possibly fondling another man's genitals.
Didn't leave enough breadcrumbs, did he?
No, he did not. And we're not going to really get into it this much this episode because we want to focus more on Discovery, but we will circle back at some point, and when we get more information. I mean, this is just an accusation about George Takei doing this back in the 1980s.
Hey, what did I do back in the 1980s? I just got back. What was that?
No, you didn't do anything. You were just a babe in the forest.
Yeah, I was born in 83, so.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully nobody was doing anything to your genitals besides just wiping your bum.
One of them didn't quite descend.
Yee. Well, now we got that information as well, too. All right. But, yeah, so George Takei, we are seeing – you were saying just before we were recording that we're seeing this whole unraveling of Hollywood.
Oh, yeah. Hollywood's falling apart. I also saw an article the other day where Gal Gadot said she's not going to do any more Wonder Woman films because of – can't remember his name – because he's involved with the funding of with the Warner Brothers of the Wonder Woman, the first one and the second one, supposedly.
Not Weinstein.
No, it was a different person.
Oh, okay.
It was a different allegation. I don't remember who he is. I just remember seeing the article offhand saying that if he's not this, I can't remember his name. It's just on the similar topic of all this stuff, like Hollywood's falling apart with all these allegations like flying left and right, and just like, how did this stuff not come out sooner, and why is it all happening at once?
You know, I think it's a floodgates. I think every once in a while, like, things get so bad, and then people are just like, fuck this kind of thing. I think you're right. I think Hollywood is, and I think it's an old guard, and it's going to have to be changed out. I mean, I think these guys are just lecherous assholes that just go around preying on young women.
Or men
in this disguise thing, but... You know, like if
the Kevin Spacey thing with Anthony Rapp.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's obviously a big thing. It's just really with Shirza Kai, I mean, obviously we grew up with him. He's kind of like a filament in the stars of people that we paid attention to all these years. And I'm hoping that the allegations is not true, but you know, if it is true,
Takai has denied the allegations.
Of course. And I mean, maybe we'll find out more information. Maybe it's just like Takai said, it's a case of he said kind of thing. Like, well, it's hard to say. I mean, it's we're talking well over 30 years ago. So,
yeah, there's got to be, inappropriate behavior is inappropriate, but there's some sort of statute of limitations if he did not come out and say something. You know what I mean? It's just, I mean, it's a horrible thing if it did happen. But at the same time, it's like, why wait 30 years?
Well, and
then also, you know, can you trust your judgment, or are you just hopping on the bandwagon to hop on the bandwagon since everyone else is quote unquote, you know, coming out about it?
My issue is more Takai always seems like a pretty stand up guy.
But so did
Bill Cosby. I mean, like we were all wrong about that dude, you know.
Bill Cosby was super. I mean, he seemed like he was super stand up.
Yeah, he was like a family guy, and you preach family values and stuff like that, and then he's, you know, drugging women and raping them.
Liken your Jell-O to diet?
Jell-O pudding pops are so good. Anyways, let's not focus so much on that. I want to get back into Discovery, but we will talk when we get more information about the Shirza Kai accusations and anything else. I mean, we don't know. It's just a big mystery at the moment. But it's something to keep all our eyes on, you know, for sure.
As Hollywood self-implodes,
yes,
Michael Caine goes back to Britain. It's safe over there.
I'm glad that Michael Caine is on our side here. Well, Michael Caine, good, have a nice trip back to England, and we are going to go on to Star Trek Discovery, and we're going to talk about non-spoilers free, just what we thought about the episode.
Cheerio.
So, this Into the Forest I Go is a really fun episode. We get the little cliffhanger at the end of what's going to happen after this, but very interesting episode, action-packed, wouldn't you say?
Oh, this was a very well put together, so much better than the last couple episodes. I think this is a nice payoff for the mid-season finale. I did curb my expectations, because last week I was like, I think I'm getting too excited for these episodes, and I got to curb it back a little bit so I can feel good about it after I watch it. I definitely felt a lot better after watching this episode than the last two.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of understand that. I mean, I don't think I was as down on the last episode as you were, but it was definitely this episode was a lot of fun, and I think it delivered in a lot of ways that I didn't think we were going to get the execution. The full delivery of all the goods on this episode, but we definitely did.
Oh yeah, a lot more happened than I really thought was going to happen. And that, yeah. I say that about every episode. They're doing an amazing job smushing so much into, you know, a relatively short amount of time.
Yeah. Right. For sure. Yeah. Anything else you want to say, spoiler free, about this episode?
It's a good episode. It's fun.
We get hand-to-hand combat. We get ship-to-ship combat. We get Stamets tripping balls.
Lots and lots of spores. So many spores.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I mean, it very much picks up immediately after last episode. So, I mean, I just don't know what to say about the episode without getting into spoilers, because everything, if you haven't seen it, would pretty much be a spoiler.
Absolutely. Okay. Should we get into our spoiler part of the episode?
Yes, sir. This is a great episode. Go watch it, guys.
Yeah, you should. If you haven't seen it, you should definitely watch it. So here we go. This is the spoilers.
Into the forest I go.
Into the forest I go. So we have Star Trek Discovery, season 1, episode 9, titled Into the Forest I Go, and it aired November 12th, 2017.
Into the Admiral Forest I Go.
Into Admiral Forrest. Nice. There you go. Well, do we really want to go into Admiral Forrest?
No, he's dead.
Yeah.
Long dead.
Might be kind of gross, too.
He got blown up. There's not much left of him.
Well, we start off the episode is Discovery is still orbiting the planet that we saw in the previous episode, Planet Pavel. We have the Vulcan Admiral Terrell ordering the Discovery to go back to Federation base. They want to go to Starbase 46.
I feel like Terrell's the only admiral who has a phone.
Yeah, well, after Cornwell took a nosedive into the Klingon territory, he was like the only guy to take point with Lorca, I guess.
The only guy who's willing to talk to Lorca.
Oh, I gotta talk to that guy. He's such a mess.
He hung up on me once. I didn't like it.
He did, but at least he's Vulcan, so he doesn't have an ego to bruise.
Oh, Vulcans have an ego to bruise. They just hide it.
I sort of agree. It does seem like they do. Admiral Trail says they're having top scientists cracking the invisibility screen on these Klingon ships, and but they want them to. They say, you know, the ship of the dead's on its way. There's no way you're sitting there with Discovery, our best ship in the whole fleet. You're not going to face the ship of the dead by yourself. So the ship of the dead must be like a tank or something like that. I just don't
understand why that ship is so powerful when it's like hundreds and hundreds of years old.
It's pretty big, though.
It's big, but I mean, there's big cars that aren't like, you know, muscle cars. You know what I mean? Like, you know, station wagons are big, but they don't go fast.
It's weird too because we get later on, and we'll touch on it more. But with General Cole in his taking over the ship of the dead and Dekuvma, apparently it seemed like Dekuvma had a far more support than we were led to believe in the first two episodes there. Cause I kind of felt like he was an outsider and all of a sudden now he's like, he's the shit. So
what, Cole?
No. Well, Cole now is a shit, but it seems like Dekuvma still has a lot of followers, even though he's dead. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, he probably had a bunch of cloaked ships there at the Battle of the Binary Stars because you know, he has that one just ram the Europa.
Yeah, true. That's
so there could have been other ships there just hanging out waiting to decloak. So we don't know how big Takuma's followers actually were.
Right. So Lorca is not really happy about it, but he says, okay, Admiral, and then they hang up. Lorca basically tells the bridge crew what's happening. Saru protests, says, we cannot leave this planet.
This is why we're going at warp. we're not spore jumping this one.
Well, that's exactly. He says it's going to take us like 3 hours to get to Starbase 46 to warp back. And what we're going to do is we're going to work on this, how we can crack the invisibility screen issue. And when we get something that we can actually do to defeat it or to find out how to crack that code, we'll jump back with a spore drive and start taking care of it. So he has Michael Berman and Saru all working on it with Stamets and a bunch of other people.
Stamets comes up to Lorca and is like, well, why aren't we spore jumping back? He's like, well, we gotta have reasons. Go get a medical exam. Everything. Every test.
And Stamets like, well, I don't know if you want me to do that.
I don't think I should do that. Do I really have to turn my head and cough, please?
Yeah, so Stamets, obviously we talked about, I think it was last episode, how he told Cadet Tilly that he's having some adverse effects from the jumping and he's finding issues with himself. So he knows there's something wrong and he's been hiding it from his boyfriend and the ship's doctor, Dr. Culver, about it because he doesn't want to get Dr. Culver in trouble because of him. All the issues. There's tons of ethical issues about him putting the tardigrade grade DNA into him and all sorts of other things.
Although something I thought was odd is that, you know, they went through that trouble last episode saying, oh, we're going to get in trouble. But then Lorca's saying, oh, we need tests so we can show Starfleet why we're using regular warp instead of spore drive. So wouldn't that mean Starfleet knows? Or does Starfleet still think they're using the tardigrade?
I don't know if Starfleet knows anything.
Yeah, it seems really strange. So, like, because if Starfleet knows, and Lorca's having doctor reports so they can explain to them why they're not, it seems like Starfleet already knows.
Yeah, but I think he's hiding a lot. I think Lorca's hiding a lot.
Oh, Lorca is hiding a whole lot, and he's lying to people, and he's doing all sorts of fun stuff, as we'll see.
Absolutely. So, but Lorca insists that Stamets goes get this medical workup. Burnin and Saru are working on to solve this Klingon's cloaking problem ability. You know, that's the thing that gets me. He's like, top scientists are working on to crack this code, and like Burnin and Saru are going to figure it out in 3 hours or less than 3 hours.
Less than 3 hours. But, you know, Saru did say Michael's the smartest person in Starfleet he's ever met. So,
yeah, but how many people has Saru met? I mean, he doesn't seem like a friendly guy. He's always scared. He's always peeing his pants, as we call them, old pee-pee pants for Saru. So,
but then also, she scored better than most of the Vulcans at the Vulcan Science Academy. So she's also smarter than Vulcans, apparently. Somehow.
She's a genius.
Losing your parents does great things for your brain, apparently.
Well, it did a lot for Spider-Man and for Superman, and Batman. So,
yeah, I guess so. You become a genius when your parents die.
Man, I wish my parents were dead.
only when they die when you're young do you become a genius, apparently.
Yeah, when you're older, nobody cares. You just become burdened. I don't
know. What. That's the worst.
That was a terrible thing to say. I'm sorry, Mom and Dad. I'm sure you're not listening to this episode. Anyways.
I'll send the link their way.
Yeah, thanks. Can you believe this guy?
Yeah. Who is he?
Who is that guy? So, anyways.
That lady. No, sorry.
Anyways. So, they're working on to crack this code. And they figured out what they'd have to do is they have to install sensors aboard the Klingon Ship of the Dead and to get sufficient data. But they also need to make 133 micro jumps to gather all that information needed to plot an algorithm that will allow the Klingon to them defeat the Klingon's cloaking device.
Well, they said it would take weeks to just of it sitting on their ship.
Right.
Or we could just jump around and get all these different vectors on the ship.
I guess. I don't know. It's like the crystal stalk on the planet Pavel. It just seemed like fudge science to me, but I'll just go along with the ride.
I mean, if you're talking about like, you know, getting all these different degrees around, why not use an even 360? Because that's the way it sounds, like a circle. I don't know.
Possibly. So that's the plan. Lorca goes to the sick bay and finds that to see what's going on with Stamets. And Dr. Culber's like, look, these effects are affecting his brain. He's getting, what he said, white matter or something like that?
Yeah, like it's the white matter in his brain is
the spores are taking
growing.
I wonder if he's got like a fungus growing in his brain.
Effects of being high. Well, I mean, I did actually post that link on our Facebook group this week about
I saw that
about the fungus that takes over ants, and the thing is, it leaves the ant's brain intact, and it just like spores into the rest of its body, and it's like a zombie. But it's as far as ants can be aware, the ant is aware that it's lost everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's pretty it's awful. I mean, obviously, an ant probably doesn't have a lot of higher reasoning, so hopefully the ant doesn't really have a time to go into some kind of self-reflection.
How did I become fungus infected?
Oh, damn it. I shouldn't have been putting my dick in that. Stamets is definitely having some issues, and obviously Dr. Culber is like, pretty freaked out when he finds out he has to do 133 micro jumps, and he doesn't know what that's going to do to Stamets.
But Lorca has a nice talk with Stamets and shows him, oh, look, I've been looking at these other things. There's all these other possible realities that we could get to.
Yeah, that was interesting. And there was an interesting line because he's talking about parallel universes that he's like kind of seeing glimpses of through all these jumps that they've been doing, that Lorca's been taking note of. And then he said, Stamets says, if we win the war, the journey continues. So, which is kind of interesting, you know. So it's obviously they're going to go into further exploration. Well, that's cool.
I wonder if that could be a season two, is just visiting other universes like Sliders style.
I think we're going to see this anyways, because it seems like, well, yeah, what happens at the end of this episode. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves yet. Yeah, so they're making these plans. So when they after they make the 103 micro jumps, they'll have all the information they need to plot this algorithm, and then they can broadcast how to cut through the Klingon's cloaking device.
Yeah, and, which I think is kind of strange because I don't think they could ever see through cloaking devices in TOS era.
No, they can't, but maybe they modified it since then. Who knows?
Although Balance of Terror was the Romulan episode, so maybe their deflector screens work differently, but I don't see why they wouldn't have tried the old way of seeing through invisibility screens.
Right. Well, we'll find out. I mean, obviously, that we're just in the beginning of all this, but Lorca tells Tyler to put together an away team for the Ship of the Dead. Tyler wants Burnham, and Lorca says, no way. And we had this like really interesting exchange how Michael Vernon's character, you know, logically deconstructs Lorca's order. It was really interesting, that little point where she just challenges him. So
challenges him without stepping over the line.
Yeah, didn't you notice, too, that Lorca, I didn't see this before, but Lorca's captain's seat doesn't have a back to it.
It's very low. Like, when you get a view from behind, it doesn't go up very far on his back.
No, it's really weird. It's like, don't you want to sit back, dude? Nah, take that out.
Not like Stamets is the one that covers up, goes over above his head in the spore room.
Yeah, right.
Might as well just get some pillows on that thing.
Yeah, throw a couple throw pillows.
Recliner.
Little curtains, play a little nice music.
Like, don't watch me when I'm shaking. Closes the curtains. I want to convulse in private, please.
Yeah, right. can we dark? Can we put shades down here? Yeah, so anyways, Lorca decides, yeah, okay, good point, Burnham, go with Tyler.
Although he was being protective of her, I still don't know what Lorca wants with her, and they still haven't explained what his deal is with her. Other than the only thing we got from him was in context is for Kings, and the fact that he thinks she can see things for as they are, instead of at face value. Emotion.
Yeah.
Like, because you know his quote, you know, context is for Kings, universal laws for lackeys. Mm-hmm. So he understands that she sees things how they truly are instead of at face value.
Right.
But other than that, I don't understand his overprotectiveness of her, you know, a felon who's going to be spend the rest of her life in jail as far as she's concerned.
And she even alludes to that. She says, I'm on borrowed time here. And he's like, we get this, you know, I should do everything I can do here, you know, including beaming over to the most dangerous ship in the whole Klingon fleet, so.
Yeah, I just wish we knew what Lorca's motivations for having her near him was. Because other than that one thing he mentions in context is for Kings, I don't see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. I don't know either. I mean, it's confusing, but maybe we'll find out more information. Maybe there's a connection that Lorca has with Burnham's character that we're not aware of, you know? Maybe he knows something about her that she doesn't even know.
He's her uncle.
Yeah, what was that line from Spaceballs?
I am your father's brother's best friend's roommate's cousin or something like that.
What does that make us?
Absolutely nothing.
Right, so Lorca then gives a speech to the crew, telling them how he's been how impressed he is with the whole crew and that they're going to look back with extreme like pride and say where they were and what they did to stop this war.
Very good captain speech.
It was a good captain speech. I'm glad they did that too, because Lorca kind of seems like just like that guy you just don't want to bump into when you're going down the hallways. So maybe you feel like maybe there's a little bit of there's goodness in Lorca still.
Even a little bit, yeah, because he was upset at Terrell. He's like, this is a undefensible life form that we should save. And I was just like, that's very uncharacteristic for you, Lorca.
I thought the same thing too when he wanted to stay for Discovery to stay at Planet Pavo.
I feel maybe he didn't really mean it. Maybe he was just trying to appeal to Starfleet values inside the Vulcan.
That is an issue with Lorca all the time. We just do not know what he seems like he's doing the right thing. Is he just playing politics?
We don't know.
No, we don't know.
But probably playing politics.
Probably for the most part. The Discovery then makes the jump and it goes back to Planet Pavo. And it's kind of – we got this cool scene as the Ship of the Dead is coming into the system and Discovery just floating in front – you know, above the planet.
Klingons like stupid humans. Only one ship.
We'll just make quick work of these guys. Yeah, so the Ship of the Dead comes into orbit. Cole orders the ship to decloak and starts to fire into – just basically just kill Discovery and kill the crew of Discovery and take the secrets.
Yeah, and we get the longest evasive maneuver scene ever. And, I mean, we're not really seeing it, but Discovery's just flying around while Michael and Ash beam on. They're on the ship for like probably 20 or 30 minutes, and so that's a lot of evasive of maneuvers for the Discovery to be doing.
I agree.
And it's one of the few times we actually see the Discovery in movement and out of warp or out of spore drive. And yeah. One thing I forgot to mention is when they did the spore drop back to Pavo, they did it in mid-warp. I thought they would have had to, like, turn off the warp engines and stop before they could, you know, switch over the spore drive. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I was like, wow, that's pretty crazy that they can work at the same time.
I don't know. I don't know how all this works. But Tyler beams aboard with Michael Burns' character to onto the Ship of the Dead, and they begin seeking around in their place. They place the first sensor, and while they're doing that, Burns' tricorder senses a human life signs aboard. Tyler doesn't want to go off the mission, but then, Burns' like, hey, if there's one person alive, we should try to save it, and it's not far from the bridge either, so we should definitely check it out.
It's kind of on the way. Can we just check it out, please?
It's just a little sightseeing along the way. Tyler doesn't want to see those sights. Not at all. They get to a door, and it's funny, is they can't get into the – she can't get into it, and Tyler starts hacking into the door, and like Burns' character is like, well, how do you know how to do this? And he's like, I've been on board of a Klingon ship for 9 months. I mean, it was interesting.
I still don't trust Tyler.
I don't know after this episode. Anyway, so they get the door open and they find Admiral Cornwell is laying on the floor, and they start Burns' character starts treating the Admiral. Meanwhile, Tyler's there, and Laurel starts to sit up because she's just sitting there around her dead friends.
Just watching her dead friends because she's
she's just hanging out with the dead.
I think it's funny that they put her in there instead of in a regular jail cell. They just like left her in there for her to
Could you imagine if someone just like they threw you into a cell full of dead people?
Your dead friends.
Your dead friends on top of that, too. So
that's messed up.
Messed up, for sure. So Lorella gets up and she starts walking towards Tyler. And Tyler all of a sudden just has this huge flashback about his torturing. And it's pretty messed up. I'm not going to lie.
It's pretty messed up. It's pretty graphic. But I thought there was like flashes of Vok in there, I wanted to say.
I did not see Vok.
There's so many quick flashes, it's kind of hard to tell.
Like, I didn't go through scene by scene. So
I didn't go. I mean, I was just watching. I was looking for things. I mean, maybe I'm seeing Vok because I want to, but it just was really weird. Lots of really quick flashes. It's hard to tell what it was we were seeing.
And Tyler. Tyler
and stuff.
Yeah, Tyler starts freaking out, and then Burn turns around and sees what's happening, and she, you know, just, you know, stuns Laurel with her phaser, and Cornwell tells Burn that Tyler's basic, you know, has PTSD, and he's going into shock, and he says he's not going to be any help to you now. He's gonna be like this for a while.
He's gonna be a potato for a bit.
Yes, exactly, and so. Burn gives the phaser to Cornwell and tells him to, just basically stay there, and she's going to try to complete her mission, and everyone's going to be coming home.
Starfleet will beam me out as soon as we get this device working and 133 jumps happen. Piece of cake, right?
No big deal. It's actually, I mean, besides Michael Burnham's character and Stamets, it's mostly on all on their shoulders, unfortunately. The battle between Discovery and the Klingons are going on, and we, like you said, we get some pretty cool scenes of them just chasing over the planet and shooting at each other. And Burnham gets to the bridge and he places the second sensor down, and
it makes a lot of noise and no one pays attention.
And you know, didn't you notice that the sensor had a big Delta symbol on the top of it? Couldn't you like maybe not do that? So
make it look a little more like a Klingon thing. It looks very Federation.
Like, you could have just left it there and just walked away from it, and maybe, like, some Klingon would walk by and not even notice. Just go, just some, you know, Roomba cleaning or something like that.
Yeah, except that this doesn't look like any of the same colors that's on a Klingon ship. Yeah, like, she's like, hey, we can disguise this. There's lots of, like, chrome and goldish colors. Let's put some chrome and goldish colors on it and not Starfleet silver.
Yeah, they don't got time for that. So, yeah, so this is when Lorca starts saying, okay, time to go to Black Alert, and we're going to start doing, because he's got the second sensor in place that they can start doing their 133 jumps.
Culver's got a little sleeve for Stamets before he goes into the chamber, though, where he can treat him remotely.
Exactly. And we
lots got, of drugs in here.
Lots of drugs. This is going to be great. You're going to love it. We got a great scene, kind of, it seems like, Stamets knows that he might not make it, so he's sort of like giving a little goodbye to Dr. Culver, like saying there's a moon by Starbase 46, and they have this great opera house there. We can check it out. So, you know, nice little scene there. And then he jumps into the chamber, and they start doing the jumps. And at 60 jumps, it's really hurting Stamets. And Culber wants Lorca to call it off.
But got to do more jumps. Fix them. Keep them alive until we're done.
Right. And then so Culber gives Stamets some of those drugs to help him through. But Stamets does not look good. Does not look good at all. So back on the Klingon ship, Cole gets this report that there's some kind of sabotage at the ship by the burial chamber. He because he wants to go to it goes into warp, and but he says like make sure like what Laurel's legs are cut off or something like that.
Oh yeah, they think Laurel's escaped. That's what's going on, because I guess they noticed that the room the security was cut.
And interesting at this point too, Michael Burnham's he has a universal translator on her communicator opened up, so she can start hearing the Klingons, and all of a sudden the Klingons are talking in English. So as we were complaining about the font on the with the Klingon subtitles, we got them speaking English all of a sudden. So a little interesting.
Well, I mean, they had a human there, so I mean, they always spoke in English around humans.
Sure, absolutely.
But this time there's a reason, because there's a universal translator like there.
So when he orders the ship to go to warp, because Discovery is just like jumping all around them.
And they're like, oh, we can't hit this. We don't even know. We couldn't hit it when it was moving at impulse.
Right, exactly. Exactly. He orders them to go to warp, and then all of a sudden to stop him, Burn starts shooting at the bridge. And then she basically comes to face Cole and is like, I know you didn't get the ship.
I know Kung Fu. Wait, no.
I know you didn't. She tells Cole, "I know you didn't get this ship. Like legitimately, you took the ship, and you have no honor." And he's like, "You don't know anything about honor." And he's like, "Yeah, I do." He says, "I killed Dekuvma, and I'm here to challenge you to get as whatever you know."
And I like using Captain Georgiou's pin as a toothpick that magically sticks to my vest, which is very nice.
Yes,
the magnetic toothpick. Klingon technology at its finest.
So they're gonna fight between General Cole and Michael Burnham's character. Meanwhile, back at the prison or the burial chamber or whatever you want to call that place, Cornwell,
the stinky room.
Oh God, it's got to be gross. The Klingons are walking in, opening the door. Cornwell's getting ready to defend. Oh, by the way, Admiral Cornwell's legs don't work. So
yeah, apparently her spine was severed during that fight with Laurel.
So she starts opening fire on the Klingons. I'm surprised she doesn't have it set on, like, full kill to disintegrate the Klingons.
Oh, no, she's on stun, and the Klingons are definitely on disintegrate.
Yeah. So she takes down one Klingon. The other one kind of, like, dodges out of the way. And she's trying to get Tyler to get out of his, you know, his shock.
His episode.
And it's interesting, he does kind of come out of it because he starts seeing the scene where him and Michael Berman kisses down on planet Pavel. You get that scene replayed in his head, and he kind of, like, moves into action. And he closes the door and kills the other Klingon, so Tyler's not totally out of it yet. Then Cole, back on the bridge, they take on a fight to the death with Berman. So it was a great scene, great combat scene.
With the Mechleths.
Yes, really cool, actually. It was a really fun scene to see them both fighting each other.
And well done fight scene. It was a lot of fun to see.
Right. And then Discovery completes the 133 jumps. Sru says he needs about 5 minutes to calculate the cloaking algorithm. And then Lorca's kind of wondering why the Klingon ship isn't firing at them, and that they've kind of just stopped there doing nothing. And he obviously doesn't know that Burnham and Cole are fighting on the bridge at that very moment. So Sru finished the algorithm, and then Tyler and Cornwall get beamed up. And at the last minute, Berman grabs the badge off of General Cole. And as he tries to stab at her, she jumps off the platform, looking like she's going to fall to her death, and she's beamed up.
Beamed up.
But when Tyler is getting beamed up, Laurel grabs Tyler.
For some cuddles.
Little cuddles. My little cuddle toy.
Don't go without me.
So, and then Lorca can see the Klingon's ship completely. It's all right there in front of them, even though they're cloaked, and they just blow it up. So, pretty cool and satisfying scene to see the ship of the dead blown up.
I think that was the most surprising thing to me, that after episode 9, Cole is gone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the Ship of the Dead, like, that's the only internal set that we know of for the Klingons, unless they do a redress of it for other Klingon ships.
I'm sure they might do a little bit if they show Klingons more after this, but this is pretty much it. So we get that basically ending, and then Burnham comes back on the ship, and she has Captain Georgiou's bad that's beamed back, and she's kind of like watching the Ship of the Dead be destroyed. So
I love how, like, Lorca's too cool to watch explode. He, like, looks at Michael, and that explosion takes forever. Like, this is like a slow-mo scene where everyone's walking in and out of the bridge. Saru gives her a nod of happy.
It's like, you did it. You didn't double cross us.
You didn't get people killed. Wow. Except for the Klingons, I guess.
Well, that's good. We want that for this time. So next we have the final part of this episode where Admiral Trell's back on the phone with Lorca.
And he's not a hologram. It's on a video screen.
Yeah, true. And he's saying that Admiral Cornwell is on an emergency ship, and it should arrive at, like, space Starbase 88 or whatever it is. And go ahead.
And then we get a scene with Michael and Ash talking about their feelings, and she's asking him, like, what was she to you? And he explains about what happened, that she was his captor, Laurel was his captor, and he kind of doesn't like telling her that I did what I had to do to survive. I boned her lots and lots of times, and we got to see Klingon boobs.
We do get a scene. We do get a final. We get Klingon boobs for probably the first time, besides, you know, the little window boobs we get on the phones. This is where I want to get into. Go back to Ash Tyler's story and why I feel like I'm, like, kind of an asshole now. It was a really compelling scene right there. He did say, I had to find a way to survive, and this was one tool I knew I could survive with.
The power of seduction.
I don't know, seduction. But something. But anyways,
he just brought lots of Viagra with him. That's the one thing he had on him when he was on the Klingon ship. It's like, crap, that's all I have.
You Viagra? Because I'm going to need some. Yeah, and Lorca was going to be awarded the Legion of Honor for what he did. So when he gets to Starbase 46, Lorca and Stamets have a little talk about how Starfleet wants to give him the medal, but he told him to give it to Stamets instead. But Stamets offers to do one more jump, and then he says, after that, I'm out. I'm done.
No more jumps.
No more jumps.
But Lorca's like, what about all these other universes we can explore? He's like, I'm done. I gotta get my head looked at.
And so he's going to do that one jump, and then that'll be it. So when they go to the last scene there, we have Tyler's has nightmares about Laurel again, and he wakes up and he goes to the ship's brig. And
he gets on his knees in front of her, even though she's in the freaking behind the shield.
Yes. And he asks her what he did to him. And Laurel says, I'll never let them hurt you. And then you get the black alert sound and Tyler leaves. Next, Stamets goes to make his jump, and when he does, Stamets starts screaming, which even when he made the 133 jumps, he never screamed like that.
That's true.
And then Stamets pulls out, but when out of the chamber, and his eyes are all white, and he's mumbling about how he's able to see everything. And
it's way more than I thought there was to be.
Yeah, and then on the bridge, they're surrounded in a debris field. I think he said Klingon debris, but I'm not entirely certain. And
I think they asked if it was Klingon debris. I don't know if they said for sure one way or the other.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wasn't clear on that. And they're saying, Saru is like, I have no idea where we are.
But the thing is, before the jump, you saw Lorca input the coordinates on his from the captain's chair. The navigator didn't do it. Stamets didn't do it. Lorca put it in the computer.
Interesting. Yeah, that's true. I saw that jump thing, and I thought that I thought because he said that he was going to he told the Admiral Trell that he was going to transmit that algorithm into Starfleet, to the Federation, so they can figure out what's going on, to the other fleets, all the other ships on the fleet, so they can see through the cloaking device. I thought at that point that he was transmitting that information, but I. You know, maybe I'm completely wrong on that. I didn't understand what that was.
I thought he already because he was in when he's in his ready room talking to him on the monitor instead of the hologram. I thought he said he'd already or was transmitting it then. But then back on the bridge, he's typing in the I think he's typing in the coordinates, and I'm pretty sure he typed in the coordinates on purpose to one of the alternate dimensions, one of the pockets that he showed Stamets because Captain Cornwall is expected to make a full recovery. B, mm-hmm. Stamets said he's never going to make a jump again.
Mm-hmm.
And Lorca doesn't want to face either of those things.
Right. Gotcha. Good point. Yeah, he does want to lose Discovery. That's what it is. So, that was the end when Saru says, I cannot find out where, they're lost. He has no idea where they are.
Lost in space.
That's right. Exactly. So we kind of have a Discovery thing going on here. And that's, we get the end here until we get into our next episode, which will, like you said, January 7th, 2019, we'll pick up on episode 10 and we'll figure out more what's happening with Star Trek Discovery. Dave, this is the final episode for this mid-season. What did you feel about this episode?
I was much happier with it after the last couple episodes. Other than the little bit of character development they did with Saru last time and then learning there were spirit animals on the planet, I just feel like the last episode was even more of a wash after this one. I feel like they could have set up some of this stuff really quickly and not have to have a whole episode dwelling on it. But this episode... Mm-hmm. was so good. We got to see a nice fight. We got to see this Ship of the Dead blow up, and I was not expecting that. I was not expecting Cole to bite it because I thought he'd be the bad guy throughout the rest of the season. So interesting. I'm really digging this season. But if they're going to be stuck in the Mirror Universe for half of the episodes that when it starts back in January, I'm going to be kind of like, well. where is this Klingon war going? We had these like mud outings. We had the crystal spire outing. We had three episodes in the mirror universe. Like, I don't feel like this is like a war chapter. They're avoiding it so hard.
But yeah, that doesn't bother me as much, but obviously I do take your point that there's not a lot of war shown on this.
And you know, they said this was going to be a war story, and I'm a little bit bummed up. It seems like they're avoiding it at every single turn, but it's not bothering me as much this episode because just everything about it was so good. The writing was really tight. The acting was great. We got to learn a whole lot more about a little bit more about Laurel, a little bit more about Ash. And I'm still not convinced, you know, I said I didn't feel bad for him. You know, the real Ash Tyler, sure, I still feel bad for him. But maybe he's having flashbacks to, like, his conversion or whatever. Because he showed no signs of PTSD at all until this episode. And right. So I feel that's really suspect. And like I said last week, you know, Laurel is the one who can activate him Manchurian Candidate style. So maybe that PTSD kicking in is a little bit of that.
Oh, I agree. I mean, there is something definitely very dark going on with Ash Tyler and whatever his connection with Laurel. If he does have some kind of Vok in him or something to that nature, wow.
Maybe that's what that torture was. Maybe they're putting Vok's mind into him, and he doesn't know. I mean, I actually texted you this more. You know, last week I was kind of I just don't know what they would do with Vok's body, but I think them putting Vok's memory engrams into Ash and making them dormant until a certain time, because Laurel is very protective of Vok. If you look at what Laurel said, she's like, no, don't kill him. Let's put him in the Shinzo. He'll die in the graveyard that he helped create. It'll be fine. He'll die there. And then she goes and saves him. And she's like, you've got to give up everything. Your body, your Klingon identity, we're gonna hide you away.
Yeah.
And then when he's on his knees in front of Laurel, she's like, she's powerless to do anything. She's like, I won't let them hurt you. And it seems like she's very much, if it's not Vok's body, Vok's mind is somehow stuck in Ash Tyler. And I think what your idea is a lot more credible, that maybe it's his mind. Because on all the scans, and if you kind of look in the background last episode when he's sitting on the bed, it looks like human internals.
Yeah, so, no. They would have caught it. I mean, obviously he's been held captive for 9 months. He went for a full physical, so there's no way.
I mean, like, even if he's not Vok, he's still possibly a sleeper agent because of all the stuff they did to him. They've programmed him. They tortured him. Maybe that was part of his torture. Something's wrong. But the way Laurel is like, I won't let them hurt you. Like, she's been very protective of Vok ever since T'Kuvma put him in charge. So yeah. It still feels like if he's not physically Vok, Vok's mind is in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, there's something going on there. It's a lot more murky than I thought it was.
This episode didn't have an awesome Lorca moment like that where he's just like so dry. He was very normal captain-y to me. He did that the good captain speech, talking up his crew and, like, you know, getting them pumped up. And there was no good sly remark from him this episode that made me go, like, oh yeah, Lorca's awesome. But he's being very deceitful. He is keeping his ship at all costs and at the cost of his navigator. Which also makes me wonder. I thought they needed him to navigate the spore drive, but it seems like they're just entering coordinates and letting the coordinates go. Like, it just seems like he just facilitates the spores working. I don't understand. Like, I thought he was the navigator, that, like, he had to focus on where he needed to go.
No, I don't think he,
somewhere.
Well, let's face it. I mean, like, the tardigrade was never going to be able, you could never tell a tardigrade, you know, I want to go to this planet, so take us there now. I mean, there is just a language barrier. Even if the tardigrade would understand, the DNA itself is the key to access. Remember, he was like, I can't make the spores talk to the map, basically, and this was the way to the
okay. It's just a human interface or a biological interface.
Exactly. So that was the only way they could do it.
So he has no control. It's just okay. I mean, I don't know. It just. Because they always call it the navigator.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little, I think it's a little vague. I don't think he necessarily tells him I'm going to, maybe he has a little more direction since he's the guy who's, he's a human and he understands where they're trying to go for the most part, but, they need him, his biological component to access the map and to get to that, those places. So.
Because that was always like the kind of prevailing theory that I was thinking and that I've seen Trek Yards and people talk about where that, you know, maybe he's just so stressed out that he doesn't know where he is. So he jumps them to the mirror universe. So it seems like he's got no actual control. He's just a cog in the machine.
Yes.
Which is kind of odd. I felt like he'd have more control, or maybe at some point he could exert control over it, but it doesn't seem like he has any. And it looks like it's Lorca who put them there. I mean, maybe he did put in the right starbase coordinates, but I don't think he did. They showed us that keypad that he typed in on his chair.
Right.
That was very deliberate.
Oh, I agree. There was some deliberate reasoning for that. But I do feel that Stamets has a... He's got some kind of insight with the spores and everything about this however you want to call it, this mechanism of how the spores interact with the universe. So he has a better understanding, but it's funny, he has not quite articulated it to anybody.
Yeah, it's odd. What about you? What are your big takeaways for this episode?
Wonderful episode. Really fun. A lot of adventure. A lot of excitement. I did feel that the final like ending cliffhanger was a little bit meh. You know, it wasn't like, oh, we're lost. Okay. It didn't feel as high pressure. Obviously, they're taking up. This must be the next part of the chapter. I mean, I think we're leaving the war after this. That's basic. Maybe there'll be some cleanup after that, but I think we're, like you said, lost in space. Where the, you know, Robinson family with the, you know, the doctor and the robot out in space trying to find her way home.
Danger, Michael Burnham, danger.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I'm seeing it. It's going. Maybe I'm wrong, but very interesting. And like I said, I think the interaction between Laurel and Tyler made me feel like a gigantic asshole, because here's my thought.
Yeah, why do you feel like an asshole? Because I still don't feel like Tyler's a full-on good guy.
Yeah, well,
he's at least, I think he's at least a sleeper agent. Even if he's not Bok or a Klingon in disguise, he's at least a sleeper.
Right. So the idea of between him, if Bok is somehow embedded somehow in Ash Tyler's mind, if that's possible, if that's a thing that's happening, Ash Tyler doesn't have any control of this. He's just a Federation officer trying to do his best for, you know, his ship and his crewmates. He gets taken in, obviously captured during the Battle of the Binary Stars, and he's been captured for, you know, the 9 months there. And it looks like he said, and when the interchange between him and Michael Byrne, when she comes to visit him at in his quarters, and he's kind of explaining to her, he's like, look, I'm not going to tell you what happened, but I think you kind of, you know what happened, you know, that we were together. And he used sexuality to get out of a bad situation. And he used that as a tool. And that is a disgusting and disturbing way for anybody to have to live. It's a terrible way to live. My thought is, if you have a, like if you're a sex worker or somebody who has been, or like someone sold into human trafficking or something like that, yes, you may seem like you're a sexual person and you're, you know, entertaining people with your through sex, but that doesn't mean that you necessarily want to be doing that.
Well, of course he wouldn't want to. He was a prisoner of war,
right? So that's what my point is. This is a huge human rights violation. I mean, obviously, at war, and Klingons don't give a shit about human rights. But yeah, so that's my feeling, is that this is the whole thing took a darker turn. I mean, before we kind of made jokes, yeah, you know, he's boning Laurel, kind of thing, you know, and we were like kind of making jokes about it. But this is he literally used his sexuality as a tool to get out of a terrible situation to survive. And he was like, that was the only way I was going to survive.
Yeah.
You know, So,
but there's so many layers to it. It's like, did he use it, or did they put Vok into him, and she was boning Vok before, and so she just kept boning the vessel of Vok? I mean, you know, it's there's we don't since they're not going to tell us yet. You know what exactly is going on. I was really hoping like she'd say Vok, she'd call him Vok or something to his face, like when he came to her in the brig. Like, I just wanted some kind of, like, confirmation on something, and it's... But just, she's so protective of him. I don't see her being protective of him just because he was a past, you know, quote-unquote lover. I don't see that in a Klingon.
No. I'm not saying that necessarily. I think... I don't know if you're getting everything the way that I'm saying. It's like, let's say that, like, there's obviously stories of people, like, women... who have been kidnapped by, you know, serial killers or all sorts of, you know, depraved human beings, and they hold them hostage. And the women just have to, you know, somehow figure a way to get through that situation alive. And so they use their sexuality as a tool.
Sure.
And it's, yeah. and it's not a good way to live. It's a terrible way to live. And so, you know,
but living is better than dying.
Yes. And so Tyler, if he is a sleeper agent or Manchurian candidate kind of character with Vok inside of him or somehow, however that's worked out, we don't know. But it's a terrible, tragic story. And it's when he was telling Byrne what he went through, and I kind of like – my heart really broke for his character. And I was like, oh, what a terrible way to live. And what a – you know, it's just – all of a sudden it took a terrible turn. Like I didn't I really felt bad that this guy had to live through this. And, you know, like physical torture is just as bad. I mean, like if he's being cut up and, you know, prodded and all sorts of other things, that's just as terrible. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, that it just took this real dark turn, and we kind of made light of it. And maybe
but that's what I was saying last week. I was trying not to make light of it, but last week I was like, you know, adding sexual abuse in addition to torture is a way to break down the mind.
Oh, absolutely. And obviously we saw that when he faces Laurel for the first time in that, you know, jail cell or whatever they were in. I felt like a piece of shit after that. You know, I'm like, even if he is a Manchurian candidate and, you know, maybe underneath all that, the real Ash Tyler is actually a really good person that just went through a really terrible situation.
Oh, I'm sure that a real Ash Tyler is a good person, but I'm not 100% sure that he really is still the real Ash Tyler. You know what I mean?
Oh, I agree. I still think there could be something going on there. And with that last scene where he kneels before her, and then she goes, "I won't let anybody harm you," kind of thing. I don't know. So
I mean, if they're trying really hard every single episode to make us think he's not really Ash, I have a hard time empathizing with him. You know what I mean? Because every single episode since he's appeared, they've done stuff to question who he really is.
Sure.
And you know, I like him. I like him as a character. He's extremely likable, but like I'm not empathizing with him because everything the show has done so far has made me think he's not really a good guy. So I'm not empathizing with him on the grounds that the show's making me think that he's a bad guy. And even in the previously on section, they kept on showing the same scenes where people are like, "Oh, how did you really survive that? Oh, that doesn't make sense. Your story's suspect." You know what I mean? They're just like,
Well, I agree. There's definitely more story too there that we haven't seen yet. But so anyways, that's where I kind of land on that after that whole, especially that last exposition between him and him bearing his soul to Michael Burnham's character was really, you know, heartbreaking to me. So I felt real bad for the guy. Obviously also, Lorca, there's something going on with him. If he misdirected the ship into a parallel universe just to keep the ship, Discovery under his command, that's a pretty messed up thing to do.
Oh, you know? And beyond that, it's not just keeping the ship. It's just like, oh, well, Stamets threatened to never use the sword drive again. Well, if we put him into another universe, he'll have to use it again.
Just one more time. I don't know. It seems really crazy that Lorca would go that far. So Lorca
because in the shuttle bay, he was saying, I wouldn't ask you to do that. He's like, no, I'll do it, Captain, just one more time. But he's like, we could warp. So it seems like Lorca is like being a good guy, but is he just trying to make him want to do the one more jump? I don't know. It's just like, oh.
No, I know. You are. You're sitting there like, oh, is he just playing Stamets?
Is he being human or is he being an asshole? He's probably being an asshole, but.
we don't know. So that's where I Lorca's obviously, he's just so shady. We just have no idea what he's up to. So there's that. And then also, just a great freaking fight scene between, Cole and, Burnham's character. It's just so fun. Oh my God. What a great scene that was. I really enjoyed that. It was really satisfying for me.
It was good cutbacks to the other Klingons, like laughing and stuff. It was definitely a great moment.
Yeah. I was so happy to see that. I don't think we've seen like a fight scene action like that in this series yet. Have we really? I mean, besides they fought a little bit on the Ship of the Dead with, when she originally shot, went over there. With Captain Giorgio, but it wasn't. That was more just them shooting and stuff like that.
Yeah, we haven't really had much hand-to-hand combat. I mean, it's mostly been ship-to-ship combat, really.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, just great scene. I really enjoyed it quite a bit. So, it's just a great episode. I do feel like kind of left it off, kind of like, oh, what's going to happen? But it wasn't like edge of the seat. What's going to happen?
Yeah, I do agree. The cliffhanger was kind of like. Oh, but it's something we all saw coming too. You know what I mean? Like we've Jonathan Frakes dropped that, you know, there's going to be a Mirror Universe episode. And then they hinted at it earlier in the episode, like, oh, look, there's these different pockets that could indicate a Mirror Universe. We could map all these different parallel universes with your spore jumping. And so it's like, they're planting the seeds on that hard. Plus, there will be, you know, since we knew the spoiler because of Jonathan Frakes, I mean, maybe if we went in completely blind, it would have had more of an impact.
Mm-hmm.
But I still feel like they were telegraphing it even in this episode.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but even if we didn't, even if Jonathan Frakes never said we're going to get a Mirror episode, Mirror Universe episode, I still think. We would have known that they're going to go in some kind of parallel universe. That'd be where my head would go almost immediately.
Well, I mean, the way Stamets has been talking for the last several episodes has made me think that anyway, but I don't know if I was thinking that because Jonathan Frank said something or if I was thinking it on my own, or maybe both. I don't know. It's just, you know, since it was dropped before the show even came out, like, that's just been on my mind. Like, when's the Mirror Universe episode going to happen? When's it going to happen? Is it happen here? Is it going to happen here? When is it going to happen? And yeah. I think I saw another interview, this time with, I want to say, Kurtzman, and I think he said Mirror Universe episodes. So it sounds like it's going to be more than one.
Oh, I would imagine that there would be. I really would. I mean, even if you would get most of it in one episode and then tie it up in the next episode or something to that nature. So no matter what, you know, on episode 10, wherever they are, if they're in the Mirror Universe or some other parallel universe, Stamets is going to have to,
get him out of it.
Yeah. And he's going to have to, you know, get back into that, chamber and get plugged back into the spore drives one more time. So we've got to get Stamets back on his feet somehow.
Well, I thought he'd go into a coma, but he was alive-ish, you know, like he was responsive. He was just like, oh my God, I can't believe there's so many different universes. And then they showed the, you know, in January, he's like running around angry. So I was, you know, I just didn't feel like the stakes were super high going into like the cliffhanger, you know. Stamets is alive. He's not like, oh my God, he's dead, or oh my God, he's in a coma. It's like, he's alive. Mm-hmm. The ship's okay. They said minor damage, and they, oh, we just don't know where we are. I mean, they could be in the Delta Quadrant for all we know. You know what I mean? It doesn't.
Sure. No, we don't. Yeah, of course we don't know. But yeah, so that's pretty cool. I'm really, really excited to see where this takes them. And maybe, like you said, maybe they'll do kind of a Sliders kind of episode where they're just jumping back and forth into parallel universes for a while. And maybe that's why we never hear of Discovery again. you know? Yeah,
I mean, I was thinking maybe that's where season two could go if, you know, if they wrap up the war in season one. Where do you think if they do get back from this parallel universe or mirror universe sooner rather than later, like, we only have one other named Klingon, and I think it's Danass. The girl with the jewelry on her face.
Yeah.
I think she's the only other named Klingon that's still alive, because other than Laurel, but Laurel's on Discovery.
Right.
So I wonder if she's going to take in that power vacuum that Cole is leaving, or maybe we'll get Core.
Possibly, but I don't see that happening, because it seems like they're distancing themselves quite a bit from former Klingon incantations of Klingons.
Sure,
of Klingons,
but it's just
or
like,
incarnations.
Who's going to fill up that power vacuum? And it's just going to like,
I think we aren't probably – I mean, how many more episodes we got left?
Six.
Six more episodes. So let's say it takes them two to get out of the mirror universe, and then maybe they do another weird jaunt into some another universe. So that's three, and then three more to wrap up the season. So I bet – honestly, I bet that the Klingon – war will be wrapped up by the time they get back to their own home universe.
So disappointing.
And, you know, and if we do see, like you said, what was that other Klingon leader's name?
Actually, Danass, she wasn't even a leader. She was the one who helped bring in Cornwell. But she's the only other named Klingon other than Laurel, I think, that's still alive.
Well, whoever takes over, I think, will maybe get a peace agreement or something like that. And then... obviously, something's got to happen between Laurel and Ash Tyler, if he is a Manchurian candidate, or if he's just under her control because he's got some kind of Stockholm syndrome with her. So, I don't know. That's yet to be seen. But obviously, there's a connection there that is much stronger and darker than we originally thought.
Oh, absolutely.
You know. Yeah, I don't know what it is. I would think that if Vok is still inside Ash Tyler, that she would have activated him by now.
I don't know. Maybe she needs to be free, or I don't know. I mean, we don't know what it takes to activate him, though. I don't know if it's a word or she's got to do something else to him. I don't know. It's all sorts of question marks. The show just brings up more questions than it doesn't answer questions.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's definitely a lot. And you know, we won't know for a while. And every time we think we have it kind of figured out, they kind of take a little jaunt in a different direction. But we did know Stamets was going to kind of come unraveled. We know Lorca's shady as hell. And, I mean, obviously something's going on with Tyler. So, Lieutenant Tyler.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you see that theory online that maybe he's the Traveler?
Oh, yeah. And that was really fun to even think about that. That Stamets could kind of like morph into the Traveler.
Or maybe why his head swells up and his fingers collapse into like those giant three things.
I know, right? I don't know. That'd be really cool to see something like that. Yeah. So yeah, really interesting.
I mean, that theory doesn't really hold much water at all. It's an interesting thought experiment because we don't really know anything about the Traveler. We saw him in three episodes. He was super creepy, especially when it came to Wesley, and he could move things quickly. But I mean, his backstory was minimal, and we never really saw a Traveler ever again. So, it's a fun thought experiment, but I really doubt Stamets is a Traveler.
And if you want to go into, we did do a Traveler episode where we just focused on him. It's episode 113. We talk about his twice appearance as a Traveler. So three times. You're right.
Because he appeared in Remember Me, and that's the episode I don't remember him appearing in.
Apparently, we don't remember him. But yeah, it was a fun episode. A lot of people, it's weird. A lot of people really hate the Traveler. Well, I remember
we call him a child molester. He's so creepy. Well, yeah, when it comes to Wesley, it's like,
come Wesley, come with me, and let's
so creepy.
let's go scan the universe together. Let's travel the universe together, me and you. He doesn't bother me as much, but it seemed like a lot of people are more, I don't know, they never liked him as a character, period.
He just wasn't that memorable, I don't think, other than how creepy he was. So it's kind of hard to like someone who's super creepy.
It's a good point. I mean, I don't disagree with that. It's just it's one of those things that he seemed like an interesting character.
He's an interesting concept.
Yes, exactly. Thank you.
Maybe, that's exactly the word. Maybe not an interesting character because the character's creepy, but the concept of the character is interesting. And the fact that he can move through space so quickly, it does have ties to the mycelium network, maybe. Maybe he's just a being that naturally accesses the mycelium network.
Maybe Vox the Traveler. He looks more like the Traveler than...
That's true.
Damn it.
Vox has become the Traveler.
Yeah, I don't know. It was an interesting thing. I did see that, and I thought it was an interesting idea. Yeah, so this episode, really cool, but I think we're just obviously not meant to get all the answers, and they're to bring us back back in January.
Of all like the cliffhangers that are meant to be cliffhangers in this episode, I feel like the two that were most needing to be super cliffhangery were the least cliffhangery. Because the first episode, The Vulcan Hello, it feels like the episode just kind of stopped. Like not so much that it was a cliffhanger. And this episode needed that strong cliffhangery feeling, and it kind of was like a dud of a cliffhanger. I mean, the episode was great overall, but it didn't give me that, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. This is crazy. It's blowing my mind. It didn't give me that. So that's why I kind of felt like the cliffhanger part was a little bit duddish. But yeah. I feel like most of the other episodes have made me want to find out what's coming next more than those two episodes, if that makes sense.
Well, even the last episode when they were above Planet Pavel and they were, you know, they knew the Ship of the Dead was coming. We were like, oh, there's going to be a fight. Oh, boy, it's coming. You know, we're going to get a showdown. You know, so that was kind of exciting to look forward to.
Like most of the episodes have had more exciting endings than those two episodes that needed to have more exciting endings.
Right. Right.
Well, I agree. Maybe that's just my take on it, but I just feel like those two needed the most "oh my god" moments, and they didn't really have "oh my god" moments to me.
Yeah, I know. I know exactly what you're saying. This episode ending being mid season, and they're going to take that break. It's interesting. I do want to find out what happens with Discovery, but I do,
but it's not that mind-blowing, oh my god, feeling. You know what I mean?
Chewing on your knuckles with like, oh, what's going to happen with them? So
because Stamets seems like he's fine. I mean, his eyes are glazing over, but he doesn't need his eyes to plug into the spore drive.
You don't need your eyes. They can look like two hard-boiled eggs. It's fine.
It's fine. I don't know. Like, I just felt like they could have, like, up the ante a little bit. Like, maybe he's in a coma. You know, it's like, oh my god, then you can't get him back. They just didn't have that, like, next level of, like, oh my god, what's gonna happen? What's gonna happen? It's like, oh, the animated universe. Stamets is still alive. He's awake. They'll just warp back out of it.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. Exactly. It is definitely not a letdown. That's the wrong word. It's just, it's not as like,
it just lacks the oomph as, that I was expecting from a mid season, like, gap, but the gap isn't really that long because we have Thanksgiving coming in a week and a half, and then we've got Christmas a month after that. So, I mean, it's the holiday times. It makes sense to have a break at this point to not like hurt their number of views because people are visiting family and holidays. It makes complete sense to have a break here. And it's not that long a break. It's only like a month and a half?
A little more. Like 2 months. Maybe a little more than 2 months. I mean, we got to get through December. You're right. Maybe a month and a half. Well, you're right about that.
It's November 12th, so we're almost halfway through the month. And so it's a little over a month and a half.
Right. I don't know, man.
It's good. It's, I mean, I don't mean to sound like I didn't like this episode. I liked this episode a lot. It's just the ending was kind of like, not as mind-blowing as I wanted.
Yeah. But hugely satisfying seeing that Ship of the Dead blow up.
Oh, absolutely. Seeing Cole bite it, seeing him take a stab in the leg from Michael. Oh, it was great.
Yeah. Do you think if Michael was on the ship a little longer, do you think she would have killed Cole? Or do you think Cole would have killed Michael?
They both had wounds. She had a nice shoulder wound, arm wound, and he had a leg wound. But Klingons do have redundant organs and redundant internals to keep them going in a fight. So yeah. I think Cole would have won just because the Klingon anatomy can keep them going. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. See, that's the weird thing is watching that fight scene, and not that Burnham couldn't fight. It's just that I was like, doesn't she know like Klingon Kung Fu? I mean, not a Vulcan Kung Fu. I thought she'd be way more effective.
I felt like it was a pretty even fight. I didn't feel like either one of them had a huge advantage over the other.
Yeah, I just kind of thought that Burnham was going to be doing more like backflips and karate chops and stuff like that. So I don't know. You know, that was my only thought. I mean, I think it was a still fun fight to watch. Don't get me wrong. I really enjoyed it. So
yeah, it was a good fight. They seemed pretty even, but I just think, you know, all things being even and you know, knowing how Klingons have two hearts, you know, or, you know, three lungs, you know, like even if he got something punctured, he could still keep going. Whereas if one thing on Michael gets punctured, she's done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
So just from a biological perspective, Klingon's got an advantage, but that doesn't mean anything because in Star Trek, Riker can beat up any Klingon he wants to for reasons.
And
Worf loses to everyone unless it's
Worf
another Klingon.
Worf loses every fight. Yeah, Worf loses every fight except to another Klingon. Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. It's confounding in a lot of ways. Yeah, but yeah, it's just huge satisfying to see that ship of the dead blow up. Michael Burnham get the best of Cole and grab that that pin from Cole, the Giorgio's pin. So
yeah, it was lots of really satisfying tie-ins, and I guess the main, you know, the main chapter one, and since this is called chapter one of season one, is the, I guess, the Ship of the Dead story arc. The Ship of the Dead initiates the war. Cole rises to power, takes over the Ship of the Dead. The Ship of the Dead is destroyed. So the Ship of the Dead, I assume, is the first major arc.
Yeah.
And then whatever the second arc is for the second half of the season.
Yeah. It's definitely fun to see that, and there's nothing I disliked about this episode. The only thing, like I said, my last thing is that Tyler, I felt really bad for him at the end. Really tragic. So I was not expecting them to take that avenue.
It was super dark. This was definitely a very MA rated episode. All the blood that they showed in the scene, like the weird things cutting into him. But that's just one thing. Like, I just wonder if that's in his mind. Like, maybe he thinks they did that stuff to him. Because his body seems like it's in remarkably good. Granted, we haven't seen him shirtless or anything, but his face seemed fine. He doesn't, like, just when we saw him in Choose Your Pain, it seems like he didn't seem like he was under abuse for 7 months. He didn't look that way.
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, I think we're going to get more information in the next couple episodes with Laurel on the on Discovery in the brig there.
Yeah, and on Choose Your Pain, I thought she was dead. And then now she's the only named Klingon alive, really, except for Danas. So that's exciting.
Yeah. I mean, and I kind of feeling that she's not going to be in that brig for too long.
Why do you think she's there? Do you think she's there just for Ash, or do you think she's there for Discovery? Because it was interesting. I did watch a little bit of After Trek before we started recording tonight. And they did a poll, and they said, why is Laurel on Discovery? Is she there to take over Discovery, or is she there specifically for Ash? And the poll was like 70% to take over Discovery. And I'm like, how is she going to take over the ship by herself? That seems extremely unlikely. If Mudd couldn't do it with that device, the time crystal, I don't see how Laurel could do it without it. You know what I mean?
I think – here's my idea with Laurel. I don't think she is everything she says. She's like, you know, I'm an interrogator. I think she's a lady on the move, and she is looking for power like any good Klingon would be. So she's looking to increase her position in her life, in her house, and in the Klingon Empire. So what she wants to do is if she has to use Ash Tyler, if he does have Vok in him somehow, or or he has she has some control over Ash Tyler because of the torture that she had on him. I think she's going to try to get as much information about Discovery, maybe not take over it, but get all everything that she can so she can bring it back and increase her power. And I don't know. I mean, she kept on saying to Admiral Cornwell that she wanted to defect, but I think she just wanted to see Cole dead.
Well, Cole is dead, and she escaped with her life. She's got half of what she said she wanted.
Yeah,
I don't know. No. I'm so thrilled that Lorella is alive and that she's on Discovery. I can't wait to see how that's going to turn out.
Yeah, she's a twisted person. Whew. She's really
twisted. I think that's one of the most exciting things to me. I'm actually really sad that Cole died because I love Kenneth Mitchell's portrayal of him. I love how he talks and how he cocks his head and he was so good as Cole. I'm sad to see Cole gone.
Yeah, he's a great bad guy, but I think Laurel is far more the more evil character. You know, Cole just Cole kind of just used his power and just kind of flaunted it. You know, Laurel is just she's just snaky, and I don't know, she does all this really underhanded, and she doesn't play by any rules.
Oh, I absolutely love Laurel too, but and Mary Chifo does such a great job playing Laurel. But I also really love Kenneth Mitchell, and I'm sad to see him gone.
Oh yeah, you know, that's it. Yeah, for sure. And but you know, every bad guy's got to die sooner or later. So
I don't know, Kang, Koloth, and Kord—they survived a really long time.
That's a good point. They did,
and they were bad guys, and then they turned them into good guys.
Yeah, right, right. I don't know, but yeah, it's this whole episode was wonderful, very, very satisfying to me.
Me too. A definite improvement over the last two.
Wow.
Well, we've got a break coming up from Star Trek Discovery. So those of you who haven't been tuning in because of Star Trek Discovery and you haven't seen it yet, we'll be back to more regular stuff next week.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. We will have a couple episodes. We'll be doing non-Discovery stuff, so that'll be fun for everybody out there who's maybe not crazy about Discovery or just waiting till they can access Discovery all at once and watch it all together and binge watch it. So,
yeah, I think binge watching would be very good for this series because there's just like questions. At least you can get them binge watching them.
a lot of people that I meet and that I don't have like a you know, that I talk to about, you know, Star Trek Discovery, their common thing is all, I'm just going to wait till it's all done, and then I'm going to binge watch all season one. So that seems like everybody's thing. I'm looking forward to canceling my subscription and then pick it up back in January because I we've been over this more than once. It's just I've never been a fan of this CBS All Access thing. I mean, I'm along for the ride because I love Star Trek. You know, that's basically it. So,
and because we do this podcast.
Well, yeah, that too. But yeah, but that's where I'm at with it. And you know, whatever, it's cool.
Oh, I mean, cool. I mean, there is some interesting stuff on the horizon for CBS All Access. They're talking about doing an Outer Limits TV show. Which, no, not alone, it's Twilight Zone, I think.
Twilight Zone, yeah.
Twilight Zone. Yep. That's kind of exciting. I'd love to see like a big budget Twilight Zone come in, especially since Black Mirror has been doing so well. And that's been so interesting. So it'd be nice to see Twilight Zone come back. And then maybe they'll up their game and put out a second Star Trek show to keep us around more often, which, I mean, more Star Trek I'd be happy with.
Yeah, right. I don't know. I mean, maybe there will be more things out there that will be like, oh, that's cool. I mean, we just got news. I'm sure we've talked about this before at some point on the podcast, but Disney is going to be pulling all its Disney properties off of Netflix. So we won't be getting all those great
Marvel shows, yeah.
Marvel shows anymore. So, and they'll all be on Disney. So, I think everyone's kind of insulating themselves, and these companies are, you know, like, so if you want Disney, you have to go to the Disney network and subscribe to them. Or if you, you know, CBS or all these different, you know, so they all have their own little things, their own little kingdoms that we have to subscribe to.
Oh, that's just, you guys just got to do what I do. I just, I subscribe to one and then I rotate them out. I only subscribe to one at a time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I went to, for Starz for American Gods and HBO for Game of Thrones, now CBS for All Access, and then it'll probably be Starz again for American Gods Season 2, and then Game of Thrones, and then this. So, I mean, I'll just be cycling them out.
Yeah, I know. It just, it's one of those things that I'm really, I don't know. Not that I begrudge that, you know, there's CBS All Access. It's just, I wish there was an easier way to do it.
Yeah, yeah, me too. But I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that more people are cutting the cord. Cable companies keep trying to charge more, so people cut the cord more often. So that means that these companies aren't getting as much money from the cable company as they would like because people aren't paying for cable as much anymore. So they're trying to recoup that by making their own, you know, streaming service. So it's just the way things are going.
Oh, absolutely, for sure. Yeah, so, you know, we'll see where all this goes. I mean, CBS All Access, if they have some awesome shows to, you know, to, other than Star Trek Discovery, I'll keep my subscription.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to Twilight Zone. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I wonder how that will turn out. That's going to be interesting.
Absolutely. I'll be looking forward to that. Maybe we'll talk some news about that if people are interested. Let us know if you're interested in Twilight Zone coming back.
Yeah, definitely. For sure. Anything else?
No, I don't think so. I think we've pretty much exhausted this episode. It's been a great ride talking about Star Trek Discovery. Nine episodes of a new show. Like, we never thought this was going to happen.
No, yeah. I definitely think we'd be standing here talking about all this information and all these great characters and situations that they've given us. It's really cool.
It's been a great ride. Overall, it's been a fantastic series. I have, you know, not liked some episodes as much as others, but I mean, that's just how any show is going to be.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And, you know,
I mean, so far, no episodes have been as bad as, you know, Shades of Grey or Threshold. So, I mean, we're doing pretty good so far.
Well, that's bottom of the barrel.
or Code of Honor.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's all pretty low stuff. Low hanging fruit for them not to hit. So, but yeah, it's been great. And I am enjoying this ride. And I'm very interested to see how they wrap up season one and where the crew of Discovery will land by the end of season one. So
it will be interesting to see how it ends up and how all this stuff becomes obsolete or never used again.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Because that's got to be part of the story, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, and there's tons of question marks hanging in the air because, you know, like you said, we've never seen a spore drive after this. So what's going on with that? And there's too much. There's too much to unpack with all that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We need more backstory. And I hope in season two, maybe they'll take advantage of the, you're on an online platform. You can make episodes longer than 40 or 50 minutes. You can go, you know, a full hour if you need to. Just, if you need more time, take it. Please.
Yeah, absolutely. In addition, real quickly, I posted it on the Facebook group page, but the Joe Rogan Experience did an interview with the real scientist Paul Stamets that the character is based off of. Did you get a chance to listen to any of that?
I listened to the one clip where he was talking about it. Yeah, it was super, super fascinating to listen to.
Man, I listened to that thing about like five times already, and it's a 2-hour episode. I mean, it is utterly fascinating.
I saw the clip you posted. I haven't listened to the full episode, but I watched the clip that was the video clip.
Yeah, I would highly, if you are interested in mycelium and fungi and all that stuff, I just found it just absolutely fascinating.
And how,
absolutely.
He was talking about how it's got its own intelligence, and they're starting to be able to track the intelligence of mushrooms and mycelium, and it's mind-blowing.
It is, and it's really interesting. I mean, he gets a little like woo-woo stuff here and there, but I mean, it's still interesting, and he's definitely a guy who has a lot of information and studied his whole life mushrooms and mycelium and fungi. He He's been used for a lot of different things, even for he goes into a whole plan how he's going to save the bees, how we're having this colony collapse disorder, and how he's got a plan on how to save that using, mycelium and fungi to do that. So really interesting. And I would suggest if you're looking for some back information about that, about all this information, it's interesting because he says that, you know, the fungi network, like when you see a mushroom on the ground, you're only seeing a small, tiny fraction of that fungus's life form. It's huge. It's spread out on the underground, which we don't see. And then he points out that, you know, dark matter in the universe, the patterns are fractals of what he sees in mycelium. So that's when they contacted him for Star Trek Discovery, he's like, well, that kind of makes sense because dark matter could be kind of like a fractal or reflection of what we see in the mycelium network on here on Earth. So
yeah, that's really fascinating. They're basing this off of real science and I like that Star Trek does that for the most part.
Well, I mean, he's saying
they try to.
Mycelium network that's, you know, in space. I mean, we don't know what that means, and obviously that's never been proven, but it's a great idea, though. Really fun.
It's fun. It's based – I mean, even if it's not real science, it's based off something that sort of is real with mycelium on Earth.
Absolutely, yeah. So anyways, Joe Rogan Experience, you can either YouTube it or download the podcast if you, if you're interested in that. It, really great conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can find – us online at Synthaholics.com, and you can find us on Twitter and social media at Facebook.com/group/Synthaholics, and on Twitter at Synthaholic Duo. Personally, I'm at David_J_Duncan.
I'm at Blackbird2004. And hey, if you can, please go to our Patreon page. If you have a dollar to throw our way to keep our podcast is obviously free, but to help us keep our business here moving on and getting to expand our network, it definitely helps if you could throw us a dollar a month. You know, that's not much to throw our way. And if you don't have that, we totally understand. But a great way to support the show is also to go to Apple iTunes and give us a rate and review, preferably 5 stars and nice things. And then lastly, if you know a friend that might be into podcasts, into Star Trek, or if they want to know the breakdowns of what we think about Star Trek Discovery, and we talk about all sorts of Star Trek too, you know, Next Gen, Voyager. Deep Space Nine, Enterprise, all of it. We talk about all that stuff. So yeah, we go into all that information. If they're interested in that, let them know that we exist. Word of mouth is a wonderful way to just spread the word about our podcast, and we appreciate that if you can.
Yeah, word of mouth is one of the best things you can do for us, even better than Patreon, because more people listen. It's better for us and better for everyone.
Absolutely.
Another thing I wanted to mention is that if you check out our YouTube channel, please check that out and subscribe to that as well. I've been putting out weekly drink videos. I started with the Spore Drive shot. A drink inspired by the Spore Drive in Star Trek Discovery. I made a brain hemorrhage the week before, and then this week I just put out one called the Starfleet Division shot, where you've got gold, blue, and red in a layered shot. It's a really pretty, neat-looking cocktail shot.
Cool stuff. Yeah, I saw that. It's a very nice. Mixologist, David Duncan.
Yeah, so I'm trying to, branch out more than just podcasts on the channel. So I'm trying to put up some videos for you guys to watch as well. And hopefully they'll attract other people who may not be into Star Trek. But I hope that's a cool-looking drink. I'll make that.
Yeah, for sure. Good stuff.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. Drinking friend.